Loud. All right, welcome, Jamie. You have 20 minutes. Would you like a 5-minute heads up when it's nearly time?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you for the intro, Judith. Judith or Judy?
Judith is fine, thanks.
All right, thank you very much. And I don't know if Carol is on, but Carol's the one that asked me to speak. I know there was a little hiccup a couple weeks ago with the scheduling, but in any case, glad to be here. And yeah, you did mention I'm here with a group of folks who are in treatment right now, some for a form of addiction or alcoholism and others not, just for other mental health issues. But in any case, I'm really glad to be here. And Carol asked me to choose a line from the book that I want to share on. So I'm going to talk about that. And then I'm really going to kind of take a deep dive through my experience recovering and kind of tie it in at the end to how it relates to this line here. So it's on page 64. The line is, when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. So I've seen this play out in my life. For many years, when I was struggling, I thought all I need to do is arrange my life to look how I think it needs to be in order for me to be okay. I need this job, I need this girlfriend, and I need everybody to not only act a certain way towards me, but think of me a certain way. And if only everybody would do as I please, I would be okay internally. And this whole process of recovery is pretty counterintuitive. What I found was that the inverse of that was true. When I started taking actions that, quite frankly, didn't make a whole lot of sense to me and started doing the next right thing and like just generally trying to be a good guy, I started to get better internally, irrespective of my external conditions. And that when that happened, all of these positive circumstances were naturally attracted to me. So I didn't actually have to go out and like fix the career, fix the family situation, fix the girlfriend. I didn't need to do any of that. I just needed to continue to grow internally and spiritually. And by virtue of that, I straightened out mentally and physically. And what that means for me is that, you know, internally I got better, but also the external world all of a sudden started to cooperate with me. You know, I didn't feel like I was swimming upstream. Everything, especially in the 7 years of active addiction leading up to having a really powerful surrender, a really powerful first step experience, just felt very dark and heavy. You know, when I think about the spiritual malady, I like to think of like what embodies it for me is this image that always pops into my mind, which is I am alone in my room by myself and miserable. And every single person that I've ever met is having this amazing party somewhere. People from different parts of my life that don't even really know each other. They're having this like amazing party and they're all talking about what a loser I am that I'm not there and how happy they are that I'm not there with them. Now that actual circumstance never happened for me, but that's what the malady feels like to me. And all the stuff on page 52, trouble with personal relationships, unable to be happy, feeling like I'm not helpful to anybody, walking around with fear in the pit of my stomach, having a noisy mind that just doesn't seem to shut up. That was like normal for me when I was obviously using, but like put the drugs aside, that's me in untreated addiction. Like no alcohol, no drugs. That is my natural state if I'm unable to like treat this thing spiritually. And, you know, for me, it started, I would say that spiritual malady really started to take effect when I was 18. I drank for the first time when I was 15. It was fun for a while. It always affected me differently than it did other people. And that was clear from the get-go that I had this allergy where I start and I can't stop. And then I had this obsession where I can't stay stopped. I would drink from a very young age. My first thought was like, this is me. This is how I want to feel all the time. And my friends at some point in the night were ready to stop and go to bed like normal people. And that was never my experience. My mind and my body said, go. And then let's say I was able to stop for a period of time. Maybe I got a DUI or I got arrested, or maybe just some sort of emotional pain got me to a place where I was able to get stopped. My mind would enter the picture and say, you could do one, you deserve it, nobody will know, whatever the lie may be. And I would pick up and I would kick off that allergy. And then again, I have to get stopped. But I would say around 18 is where I crossed that line to where like I was no longer the hard drinker, the hard user. I was the real deal chronic addict. And that's when the spiritual malady started to rear its head. So for me, what did that look like? That looked like, again, that feeling that I mentioned initially, feeling separate from. To me, the malady is I feel separate from everything else. I feel separate from you. I feel separate from me. And I definitely feel separate from the universe. God, universe, call it whatever you want. And that very quickly manifested into external unmanageability. Lost friendships, family really wanted nothing to do with me. I started going to the ER unit and the psych ward. Debilitating anxiety, acute anxiety and depression. And then all of the external unmanageability that piles up as a result of the using on top of that. So I was arrested 5 times. I could tell war stories all day, but ultimately I started going to meetings because I at least recognized like, yeah, I have this thing. And my mentality in each treatment center that I was in was different. The first rehab when I was 19, they said, you have a disease and you're never going to be able to drink or use successfully. And I laughed and I said, how do you know? You just met me. I just like to party. Second rehab was, okay, maybe it's a disease. And this is not a disease. Second rehab was, okay, it's a disease, but I don't have it. Third rehab was, okay, it's a disease and maybe I have it, but I don't really buy the solution that you're telling me where like I need to go through these 12 steps. Fourth rehab was, okay, there's something to be said for this solution, but I'm just going to pick and choose what I think I need and I'll make it work. And by the end, I realized, yeah, I'm the real deal. I'm a really, really bad addict and I need it all. I need the fellowship, I need the steps, and I need eventually to be of service to others. So I was going to meetings. This is after like rehab number 4 or 5. I get arrested shooting heroin in a bathroom stall in Penn Station in New York City. And at that point I was like, okay, I'm the real deal. I got to go to 12-step meeting. So I'm raising my hand. I'm trying to get honest in meetings. I got 1 day back, 2 days back, unable to get more than 2 or 3 days together. The message that I heard was don't drink and go to meetings, or don't use and go to meetings. And I think that's great advice as a starting point. But the truth is, if I had the power of choice to not drink, then I wouldn't need to go to meetings. I heard people say don't drink or don't use no matter what. My experience was no matter what I use, despite the consequences that I know lay ahead, despite the fact that I identify as an addict and I know I'm not supposed to be doing it, my mind is cunning and baffling. And my mind convinces me that like maybe on paper, I know I'm not supposed to be doing this, but I believe my own lies and it speaks to me in my own voice. Um, So that message that I was hearing in meetings that, quite frankly, in my opinion, had somewhat of a watered down solution that didn't like do it for me, obviously was not sufficient. So I couldn't stop. I finally got to a point, and this was about a week before I went to my final rehab, which was rehab number 7. And somebody said to me, the guy that ended up being my first sponsor, he said, look, if you don't do the work, you're not going to change. And if you don't change, you're not going to stay. And I believed him. Because what would happen was that I would get out of a rehab, I'd be feeling a little bit better. And I would say, you know what, maybe I was making too much of a simple matter. And I would pick up and I would kick it off all over again. And within a day or two, it would be as bad as it was, if not worse. So he explained to me, look, this thing that you have, this, you know, call it a disease, condition, whatever you want to call it, of addiction, which for me also coincided with some other mental health issues. For whatever reason, people have been taking the spiritual approach to address it. And for some reason, I don't know how this was lost on me for 6 years in meetings. But if you don't have a shift in how you view the world, call it a spiritual awakening, spiritual experience, psychic shift, whatever you want to call it, what's going to happen is what always happened, which is you're going to feel a little bit better and you're going to pick up again. And so the way that we deal with this is we treat the spiritual piece. And by doing that, I end up feeling comfortable enough in my own skin where I don't want to get out of feeling the way that I feel. And if I don't want to get out of feeling the way that I feel, then I'm way less susceptible to the mental obsession coming in the picture and saying, you could do one. And if I have the obsession lifted, then I don't need to worry about the fact that I'm bodily different from others, that I start and I can't stop because I'm not going to take the first one. And so it just became really obvious to me around that time, okay, so I treat the spiritual malady, the stuff on page 52, the depression, the anxiety, I treat that, and that will alleviate everything. I don't need to like tackle everything after that. I don't need to, and I knew that was true with respect to having the obsession lifted and just like the using piece, but I didn't quite get that it also referred to everything else in my life. So I get out of that last treatment center. I moved back to New Jersey. I was living in a halfway house with like 10 guys, and I really was completely broken, even on the heels of a first step experience. I just like didn't know like how am I gonna like get my life to a place where I'm okay. And so what happened was I jumped into the 12 steps and I did what the guy told me to do. And what happened is I started to light up. And in particular, like, I knew I was going to die if I picked up, but I wasn't really keen on the whole idea of God. I didn't really understand like why I need a spiritual experience. But when I got to the third step, it was really, you know, the second step is a wide door to walk through, right? I just have to be willing to lay aside prejudice. Maybe I don't know what I don't know. That was enough for me there. When I got to the third step, it was, okay, you know, there's this third step prayer that we just read, which frankly is not very intuitive to me. He had to dumb it down for me and say, look, the third step, I'm gonna define it differently. I'm gonna quit playing God. Meaning I'm gonna get out of the outcome business. I'm gonna stop doing everything to produce an outcome that I think I need in order to be okay. 2, I'm just gonna do the next right thing and like generally try to be a good guy. And then 3, I'm gonna continue with the work. And the reason to continue with the work was important is because it was explained to me that this process of recovery is less about addition than it is subtraction. I could try to like hit my knees and like try to believe in God all I want. And maybe I'll have like a white light, you know, euphoric sensation. But what good does that do me if the next day I'm back to self-pity and resentment and you know, not feeling connected? So he explained, look, what we're doing here in steps 4 through 9 is we're stripping away the things that are blocking us. We're looking at these different manifestations of self and the stuff that quite frankly just gets packed onto one another throughout the course of our lives. And then it just becomes the lens through which we view the world. And I'm not thinking like, yeah, I'm really pissed at that guy in eighth grade who stole my crayon or whatever. But all of that stuff starts to inform the way that I see everything. And so this line in the book is right before we get into writing on the fourth step. And I've seen this play out time and time again. When people When people get better internally through this process, it's amazing how the external completely changes and like we're not even recognizable. Like, okay, so my life on paper, I'm just going to talk about the external for a minute because it's related to this line. So I'm in this halfway house. I have this internal shift. I start to feel happy. I start to feel useful. The stuff on page 52, the bedevilments start to fall by the wayside. And then I move out of that apartment and I get my own apartment in Hoboken. And it's right outside New York City. And I'm 25, 26. And my life really on paper is no different than any other 25, 26 year old's life, minus the fact that I don't drink and use drugs. So I start to reconnect with old friends. I start to get a relationship with my family. I get a new job that was like, I would have just killed to have just a few years prior when I was putting a needle in my arm. And then I say, you know what? I feel like I've underachieved in my career a little bit. I'm going to apply to business school. I'm going to get completely honest about my story. And, you know, again, not playing God, right? Just being honest, doing the next right thing, and then let the cards fall where they may. I ended up going to Duke, getting my MBA, and then going to Wall Street. And I did investment banking for the last couple of years in New York City. I mean, I'm almost embarrassed to talk about what my life looks like today on paper. Because I don't, like, there's no ego in me saying what I just said. Like, I firmly believe this was given to me. All I did was, like, take a couple. I like to say, I heard somebody say this in a meeting once. Spirituality is 90% God's grace and 10% my actions afterward. Meaning on my own power, I could not get clean no matter what. No matter what I pick up. Something, I had some sort of tailwind. Something was helping me so long as I continued to like take a couple actions along the way. And that's why this whole thing's counterintuitive, because I'm raised to think that like you go out and you work hard and you work smart and you can get what you want. And that doesn't mean that I don't like expend effort to try to like, I'm a grinder. I'm ambitious. I love to work. I like to pursue things and I still do those things. The difference is that I'm not tying an outcome to my self-worth. I'm not tying an outcome to good or bad. What I think is good might be bad. What I think is bad might be good. I find that out later. You know, live forward, understand backwards is something that someone says that whose recovery I respect. And eventually I got in touch with a guy that kicked me out of my fourth rehab. He said, hey, I sold the rehab and I want to start something a little bit more mental health focused. Do you want to be involved? We start talking every day. And here I am, CEO of a mental health facility down here in Florida. So I could go into how my life is different, but I mean, I gave you like a very high level. The truth is it doesn't even resemble in the slightest what my life looked like before because I straightened out mentally and physically, but I didn't do it by saying, I'm going to do it this time. I'm going to get better. I did it by saying, I'm screwed and I don't know what to do. And I'm going to start listening and just take some direction and just try to do the next right thing. And I like to say I have problems in areas of my life that I used to not have areas in, you know, like I have problems, but I look at those problems and I'm like, oh my God, I cannot believe that's my problem today. Like they're luxury problems. Before the problem was, how do I not die? And then it was, how do I get my relationships back? And then it was, how do I get my, and the gravity of the problems really started to diminish. Not to say that perception isn't reality sometimes. Sometimes the problems of today feel just as big if not bigger than the problems of 8 years ago. But I know objectively at the end of the day, when I can take a deep breath and get quiet, that they're not. And so, yeah, that's all for me. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Jamie. Wonderful to have you all with us. And thank you for such a lovely share. Really appreciate it. So let's go ahead and open up the meeting now. And let's see. As a gentle reminder, we only record our speaker. So I'll go ahead now and stop the recording as a reminder to myself, because I can often forget to do that. Okay.